Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The average Pennsylvania college student leaves school with $37,000 in student debt. In total, Pennsylvania students owe about $68 billion. That's one of the highest figures in the nation. Now, that's money that most people starting their careers are not spending on houses or cars. In other words, contributing to the economy. Governor Tom Wolf is proposing a scholarship program of $204 million called the Nellie Bly Scholarship Program that would aid students at the 14 state-owned universities who agree to stay in Pennsylvania after graduation. However, the governor wants to take money from the state's Racehorse Development Trust Fund to pay for the scholarship program. We'll talk about both aspects of the proposal on today's show. Joining us in this segment of the program is Pennsylvania Secretary of Education, Pedro Rivera. Secretary Rivera, welcome back to the program.
Scott, thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Deputy Secretary for Post-Secondary and Higher Education, Noe Ortega. Deputy Secretary Ortega, good to see you this morning.
Thank you, Scott, for having me.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Rivera, Pennsylvania student debt, as I just mentioned, is one of, if not the highest in the nation, with $37,000 in debt leaving school. Now, that's the backdrop for the Nellie Bly Scholarship Program that the governor's proposing. How did the scholarship program come to be? How was it developed?
You're absolutely right, Scott. When we look at college debt and debt here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we're the second worst in the country. And we know, as we've been engaging through the Department of Education and really looking at the governor's plans and vision for the future, I think it's important to step back what our first year in office looked like, our first year as an administration. We spent months before engaging in any policy, really visiting the Commonwealth, visiting school districts, visiting employers, visiting industry leaders, and really engaging in conversation around what they wanted their educational system to look like. And each and every time we had that conversation, the conversation steered towards the future of our workforce, the workforce demands, the needs of the workforce. So we really started to change the trajectory of our education conversation. It wasn't just education for education's sake. It was ensuring we were preparing the next generation workforce that could earn an industry certificate, 2-year degree or 4-year degree, and earn a livable wage or a break-even wage. And we wanted folks to stay here in Pennsylvania. We wanted them to earn a great wage. So now, you know, one of those conversations, as the governor has made significant investments in education and in STEM computer science, in career readiness, college affordability is just the absolute natural next step in this conversation. And knowing that here in PA, we're amongst the worst in the country in terms of student debt, we understand, and I think it's a definite conversation for later, the percentage of high school graduates is increasing, but the number of high school graduates here in Pennsylvania is decreasing. We are at a workforce crisis. We the number of graduates that are moving on to earn certificates and degrees and meet our workforce demands is declining as well. So the governor is not just thinking about today, this year. He's thinking about the next 10 years and what the workforce is going to look like.
When you say college affordability, there is a lot that comes under that heading. But one of the questions that many Pennsylvanians would have, and their families as well, is why is student debt so high? Why are we number two in the country with $37,000 in debt, leaving school $68 billion? Why is it that Pennsylvania has that ranking, that we are that high, and there are students that owe that much money?
So there are a number of factors. I mean, we know, first and foremost, as we look at other states across the country, in many instances, there's a larger state contribution to their systems. Secondly, we have many systems here in Pennsylvania. We have the state system. We have community colleges, state-related, you know, many private and independent universities. And so where there are many options, the demands, are great as well. And lastly, you know, something that we also started to look at are the opportunities that K-12 students have and adult learners have to engage in college and career opportunities early on. So looking for more funding and providing the scholarship is only one spoke in the wheel that we're working and looking to address college affordability.
As you stated, Pennsylvania has one of the lowest percentages for state assistance for its universities. Is there anything that could be done on the university level to cut back, to hold the line on tuitions? It's not just tuitions. It's everything. It's books. It's room and board. Is there anything that on the university level, Deputy Secretary Ortega, that can be done?
Sure. And Scott, there's a number of things that the universities have begun to do to curb costs, rising costs of higher education. The PASHE system last year froze tuition, which is a really great first step. I want to point out, because I think it's important for us to know, that as we discussed about the rising costs of higher education, many of the careers that have resulted in us putting in strategies to encourage more students to get a post-secondary attainment are careers of the future. To build the infrastructure at colleges and universities to be able to provide more ally health professionals, more STEM folks, has a lot of cost. And I think expectations of students and families are growing. The classroom is changing for what it was when I went to school. So there are a lot of things that are part of the balance. So I think institutions are doing a really good job in trying to maintain costs, but there are challenges as you try to meet the demands of the new and growing workforce.
All right, you say there are a lot of costs in these preparing these students for the jobs of the future, the careers of the future, what kind of cost?
Facilities is a perfect example, right? In many cases, you take our PASHE liberal arts institutions. Many of them were known as being institutions that prepared educators, now moving into health professions and science professions that require new approaches. Technology is something that is changing the platform, the way they learn. So the infrastructure to build those things matter. The nice thing is many of those are upfront investments that have long-term benefits, right? And so we happen to be caught between the crossroads of those things being the infrastructure being built. So this is why we think about the investment now having multiple impacts in the future. I think it will change in terms of the amount of student loan debt being incurred by students in Pennsylvania. In many ways, Nellie Bly is a perfect example of the necessary first step for this administration, and then the wonderful work that our institutional leaders are doing in trying to reciprocate these efforts by curbing costs and trying to find ways to maintain. I think ultimately we're going to see some significant impacts, but I think a lot of this early on conversations, we've got to be patient.
I want to get on to the scholarship itself and talk about eligibility and how much it would help students in Pennsylvania. But continuing this line of conversation, when you were talking about that cost and the universities have had to make changes, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that this has been one of the criticisms of not just the state-owned universities, but colleges and universities across the country, is that there seems to be an arms race. Whether it's, the facilities that you're talking about to prepare students in the classroom, but also dorms, also, the amenities that go along with it. Because let's face it, all of these institutions are competing for students, and it is more and more difficult, as the Secretary mentioned, when you have fewer high school graduates here in Pennsylvania. Is there some truth to that?
I think there is some truth to that. When you think of facilities, physical plant, and the amenities and the resources available to students are absolutely something that families and students will consider when choosing a college or university to attend. What we realize, many of the what we've noticed as we've been engaging and visiting colleges, many of the investments that they're making are really aligned to industry standards. When you think about the next generation workforce, we have to ensure that our academic space, our classroom space, emulates the workspace. And so as industry is getting much more modernized and utilizing technology, we have to ensure that the students have access and are working on that technology when they're in the classroom. And so, we're really proud about innovation, and we're really proud of our innovation in here in Pennsylvania. And we love to see the new tools that industry is using. But we tend to forget, in order for individuals, in order for professionals to work and use those tools, utilize the tools to be more effective, they have to learn how to use those tools, starting at the foundational level in our college university system. And that's where many of those investments are sometimes made. But yes, you're absolutely right. Colleges are competing with each other, not only for state students, but even, you know, now we see the growing number of out-of-state and even international students that are looking to take advantage of a good high-quality system.
Do you have to turn to out-of-state students since there are fewer high school graduates in Pennsylvania?
We do, and I think that's also one of the beauties of Nellie Bly and the governor's vision. We absolutely, our institutions do, look towards providing service and recruiting out-of-state students. Now, by looking at this opportunity through the scholarship in Nellie Bly, in order to qualify for the reimbursement, you'd have to stay in Pennsylvania for 6 years. And that's where we can then attract, retain, and promote growth here in the Commonwealth of students coming from other states and taking advantage of a high-quality education system.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me when the governor talked about this in his budget address is that it is not just providing money, and we will talk about eligibility and that kind of thing in a moment, but it is not just providing money for students, but it also is addressing brain drain. Now, there's a term, I don't know, for some reason you don't hear as much about that anymore, but of students leaving Pennsylvania, that they would have to stay in Pennsylvania, and it would have to be at one of the 14 state-owned universities. So it does several things. A couple questions, though. Why only the state-owned universities? Why not any university in Pennsylvania?
And Noe and I can share our perspectives on this, but first and foremost, when we're thinking innovation and we're looking at opportunities for our higher education students, the PASHE system we felt was prime to really take advantage and partner in this space. First, it's one system that we can work with and work through their leadership. It's geographically diverse and dispersed throughout the Commonwealth. They serve students in practically every community, every county in Pennsylvania. We know that students in PA tend to choose institutions that are closer to their homes. And because of the lower cost of our PASHE schools, that was the greatest bang for our buck. By looking at the Nellie Bly Scholarship and what the governor is proposing, we can practically, offer students who qualify, so that's about that $75,000 of family for students who qualify, free college tuition. So this is an attempt to provide free college. So the PASHE system, in partnering with them and them being really out-of-the-box thinkers and good strategic partners in this space, is allowing us to provide practically free college to students within the Commonwealth.
I would be remiss, Scott, if I didn't remind us that the state system is the system of Pennsylvania that we're obligated to.
It's owned by the state.
And it's, in some ways, we've got to make some decisions about how to begin to pursue and make college affordability at our state system schools. That's one of the impetus for stepping into, at least as a first step. We started off the conversation by saying this is part of the governor's larger college affordability strategy. We're not done having conversations about the various sectors, right? This is obviously a first step in a larger conversation because the need in this state is wide.
And quite frankly, the state system needs some help. I mean, 2 years ago, I don't know about last year, but 2 years ago, Westchester and Millersville were the only two schools that saw an increase in enrollment. And again, a lot of that has to do with the decreasing number of high school graduates in Pennsylvania. But at the same time, is that something that is part of this as well, is to help the PASHE system, the state system of higher education?
It's to make them, continue to make them competitive amongst their peers across the country. So this is absolutely not an effort to choose one system overall in Pennsylvania, but we realize there is a system that we're going to look at thinking to think forward facing and really be innovative in this space. And the PASHE system, being our state system, were the institutions that we thought would be a great first step.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Speaking of education, we have a Smart Talk road trip coming up Thursday, day after tomorrow, at Harrisburg Area Community College, where we discuss career and technical education. We invite you to share your questions in advance or even attend, and you can do that by going to WITF.org/events. We're going to be at the Rose Lehrman Art Center on the campus of Hack in Harrisburg, and we'll have some students there. In fact, a lot of students there will be able to ask questions and address some of these issues that we're talking about with career and technical education. If you're interested in today's topic, I'm sure you would be interested in that as well, and you can see a Smart Talk being broadcast live as well. You can see what else is coming up on WITF Smart Talk. Go to WITF.org/smarttalk. Today we're talking about Governor Tom Wolf has proposed a $204 million scholarship program called the Nellie Bly Scholarship Program to help college students pay for their education at Pennsylvania's 14 state-owned universities. Our guest is Pennsylvania Secretary of Education Pedro Rivera and Deputy Secretary for Post-Secondary and Higher Education Noe Ortega. If you have a question or comment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And we have a few phone calls on hold and emails. We'll get to those in just a moment. But want to explain the scholarship program and the plans for it, eligibility and that kind of thing. So exactly who would be eligible, how many, how large are scholarships, what are we talking about?
So, Scott, this is an absolutely amazing opportunity for us. We're extremely excited to work with the governor on this. And so first and foremost, I think it's important to understand that this is a scholarship award that's going to fill the gap between student financial aid and the cost of tuition. Eligible students must enroll full-time in an undergraduate degree at Apache University and qualify for federal need-based financial aid such as Pell Grants or federal subsidized loans. So because this is a need-based, this is going to be a last dollar in, and it will provide financial relief to more than 25,000 students in Pennsylvania. So what we understand is through this, and over the course of 6 years, we could practically provide those students who qualify in that space, so 25,000 students, with free college tuition. Now, there's a workforce component to this as well. We're not only focusing on educating and providing free college tuition, but we're looking at the long-term health of the university and of the Commonwealth. And Noe can share a little bit about the workforce strategy.
Sure. And basically, the expectation is that any students who receive the Nellie Bly Scholarship will stay in the state for the duration of the time that they receive the award. So if you were to receive the scholarship for 2 years to attend Millersville University, then you're expected to stay in the state for 2 years to repay.
Doesn't have to be at Millersville or Lancaster County, anywhere in the state.
Stay in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And which is fantastic and opportunity for us to sort of do what institutions have done in Pennsylvania is they provided economic resiliency and vitality for our community. So that's sort of the premise around the scholarship.
We have an email question from Julia. It says, the caveat of the scholarship is that students reside in Pennsylvania after graduation for as many years as they have utilized the scholarship. Is there a plan to assist with job placement for those students within the state of Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. I think over the course of the past 5 years, one of the opportunities that we've had was to work cross-agency. So, you know, the Department of Education has not worked in silos for the past few years. We've worked with our partners in labor and industry. We've worked with our partners in economic development and have created, you know, user innovation zones to really identify workforce opportunities and demands. So what we know through our state system schools, they don't only create pathways to degrees, you know, haphazardly. They actually look at the geographic needs of the workforce and they prepare students to meet those needs. So there is going to be both a traditional system to help with job placement, but there is a natural system of job placement in the Commonwealth right now.
Isn't that something? I've had a number of the school presidents on the program, chancellor of the state system, and one of the things that we have to talk about is something you addressed very early on, innovation, preparing students for the jobs of tomorrow. Does that mean that a student that has a major where, I don't know, that there aren't a lot of jobs, that there aren't a lot of careers in that field, would be less likely to get one of these scholarships?
Well, I'd say that. Do you mean if they have to leave because they couldn't find, a career option in that field? Well, you know, the caveat for reimbursement is that they stay in Pennsylvania. I can also share, as we look at the specific majors that students are taking, you know, through our state system schools and our workforce demands, there is very close alignment. You know, as you visit communities across the Commonwealth, and as you know, Noe and I have visited colleges and universities, and then we go on to visit our workforce partners through our STEM or our career initiatives, we see that there is a demand for skilled workforce all across Pennsylvania. So a student may not find a specific job if he's taking, if he's majoring in something that might have small demand. But you know what we're looking at in terms of that workforce community and the workforce need, they're going to find a place and a space by which they can be successful. And staying here for 6 years in Pennsylvania, when we visit, one of the stories, the narratives we hear quite often is I came here for school and I stayed here and raised a family. And that's exactly the mentality and the scenario we want to build.
One of the narratives that I want to make sure, Scott, is not lost in this is that often people are also doing the opposite, which is choosing a job based on the earning potential because college cost is so high. So the Nellie Bly Scholarship does provide an opportunity for us to think about the public service jobs that often get overlooked by young folks because they're thinking about what's the return on investment in my major. And we're hoping that when we talk about this, as we take advantage of opportunities like this, we emphasize the fact that by reducing the costs, making it more affordable, decreasing the likelihood of that student having to borrow a student loan, people will choose to go into a number of the professions that we need to see them in: social work, psychology, teaching, all these careers that often get passed because people begin to associate a lack of return on investment on them to pay back their student loan. So don't lose that message.
But getting back to Julia's question about job placement, I mean, you talked about, looking at all these things, taking into consideration, but would there be something specific to help these students who take the scholarship to get a job afterwards?
So the colleges and universities do tackle that issue of work placement, availability, and what the career options, what the workforce options are in their geographic community. So that does exist through these systems, which is one of the beauties of working with a system. We get to work with the PASCHE system and create those parameters and opportunities for students, not only for the first year of the scholarship, but for the duration of the funding that's being available.
Let's take a phone call from Randy in Lancaster. Randy, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. It seems to me that the reason that college expense is rising so fast is that we still teach the way we did 100 years ago. We even seem to think that it's better to have a 14-to-1 student-faculty ratio rather than, say, 28-to-1 or higher. You know, in short, what we say is, gee, in teaching, inefficiency is good. No other industry does that. I mean, imagine if we still made automobiles the way we did in 1930. So I'm curious what the guest thinks about this.
All right. Thank you very much for your question. What about that? Have we modernized? I mean, you've talked a lot about innovation, the jobs of tomorrow, but to a degree, we still are using a model that is fairly old.
Well, we've absolutely modernized. So, for example, if we look at the options through our colleges and universities now, we have online options. We have tele-education opportunities. And the truth is, with many of the content areas that they're able to teach larger classes, colleges and universities now do that. Now, when we start to get into the smaller student-to-teacher ratios, when you start to engage with more specificity and specified content area, and those could potentially be areas that you don't want, a larger number of students to instruct the ratio because it could impact the quality control, whether it's something in the medical field or something that's highly technical, or you have to utilize lab space and you need a professional in that arena. But what we've seen as we visit colleges and universities, those early years where you can have a larger per student ratio, you'll see larger per student ratios or even hybrid options for those courses, which bring down cost and allow you to reach more students. And then as you become, you move more and start to specialize, then the classes do shrink.
All right. Now, I'm going to bring something up that you're going to say, where is he going with this? But one of the big controversies in Pennsylvania among public schools, charter school tuition. And one of the arguments is that if you don't have brick and mortar, you have students who are not attending a charter school, brick and mortar charter school, but are using a cyber charter school. Make the analogy with a lot of universities that are now offering much more, just what you described, mm-hmm. online courses. Mm-hmm. Why would those courses, or maybe I'm wrong, why would those courses cost the same as if you were actually attending a class at one of the 14 state-owned universities?
So the market really does drive that. And we ask that question, you know, all the time. Remember, we, you know, working with the governor, we represent, you know, we represent the community, we represent the taxpayer. And so, you know, we always want to be good stewards of fiscal dollars. And so we ask the question. And the truth is, early on in this, through this innovation, a lot of the cost associated with online learning options is reinvested in that system to modernize the equipment, the technology, and the access themselves. Colleges and universities are still growing in that space. And so they've been using that investment, you know, to improve their platform and to improve those options. But that is a question that Noe and I ask every time we go to a board meeting, when we meet with leadership, and it's something that we do monitor closely.
Can't charter schools make that same argument?
Charter schools. When we worked with charter schools, traditional charter, public charter schools.
I know I'm getting
space,
off.
Yeah, no, but I think it's a great question. And by the way, it's probably something you'll invite me back
right,
to.
Yeah, exactly, you know, right. Yeah.
In your future to discuss. So I don't want to preview everything we'll probably talk about in you know, the next time we come together. But you know, the truth is, the K-12 online space has already been much more innovative, and it's a much more packaged model. What the governor has proposed through his proposal around, you know, updating the charter school law, has taken that into account. He hasn't recommended the lowest per student rate. He's actually, you know, recommended one of the higher per student rates that would still not push charter schools out of business. So he is trying to be equitable in that space.
And you're right. That is another program, Secretary, that I think we will have to visit here in the near future. Let's go to Heather in Chambersburg. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi. So first thing is that I do not believe in online schooling. I went to school. I got my master's. There is something to be said for being held accountable in a classroom in front of an instructor, a professor, and not being able to look up the answers in your own home as you're taking a test. Plain and simple, that's the way the world works. Some people are going to be honest. Some aren't going to be honest. Second is, I do own my own business, and on a daily basis, I have people that are high school graduates that can't read a measuring tape, that can't do simple math, that can't make change at a cash register. And, you know, I think it's great that we're going to offer these scholarships to the state universities. What I would like to see is we actually have these state universities have programs put in place that allow a technical skill and a technical background, construction work, that sort of thing, welding, simple blueprint reading. I had Hack recently quote a course for me for four of my guys, and it was $6,000, which was crazy to me, and just so I could get them to read blueprints. You know, most of our students aren't A students that are graduating in Pennsylvania. If you're not A plus 4.6 GPA or a special needs student, you're not getting attention from a high school counselor that's needed. You have one high school counselor for 400 students.
Hey, Heather, I have to interrupt. I have to interrupt and have our guest answer your question. Hey, thank you very much. And as you heard me say just a few minutes ago, we're going to be addressing this very topic on Thursday when we are at Harrisburg University, Harrisburg Area Community College. But the point she's making, you talked about jobs of the future. A lot of these jobs that she's talking about are jobs of the future as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first, I think, Scott, we may have to schedule like a week together to
education
tackle
week.
All the education week. But she's right. I think when you think about it, it's not only associated with this higher education affordability and options conversation. Something that the governor has directed and we've been tackling as well while working on this has been our career readiness standards. And we've fully revamped career readiness as a platform. I think under the Wolf administration, we've moved away from education for education's sake and have said, all right, what is our ultimate goal as educators? And that is to prepare the next generation workforce. And so some of what we've done, we've created the Career Readiness Toolkit, which addresses many of the issues that she just discussed. It addresses entrepreneurialism. It addresses how to engage as a member of a team, how to communicate. So the skills that employers have shared with us that they want our students to learn when they enter the workforce, but I can't create one class around every single one of those competencies. We created a toolkit and competencies as to how teachers can integrate that learning into their classroom, both at the K-12 level, and then it continues on through higher ed. So we are addressing those issues here at the Commonwealth.
I want to move on in our last few minutes about how to pay for the Nellie Bly Scholarship Program. In the second part of the program, we're going to have some representatives from the horse racing industry in Pennsylvania. What the governor is proposing is taking money for the scholarship from the Racehorse Trust Fund. Now, the industry, and we will hear them say this in just a few minutes, they say that this would kill the sport in Pennsylvania. What about that?
You know, every year when we work towards the budget and we address the budget and present our budget to the General Assembly, and I have to share, in the Department of Education, we've had the luxury of having an amazing relationship with our lawmakers. I mean, we sit at the table, we spend a lot of time discussing, and one of the commissions we're addressing now is the Higher Ed Affordability Commission. And I can share with you, as a secretary, every year I've sat and defended a budget, and there were years where, you know, in education, I think one of our first conversations, I was actually a superintendent in our first conversation together, Scott, was the loss of $100 million, you know, in funding. And I know how difficult it was to have to reassess and realign and redevelop programs, having lost such a significant amount of money in education. Every year we have these conversations around commitment of dollars and the fact that, you know, resources aren't finite in the Commonwealth or aren't finite anywhere. And the governor has made a commitment to, you know, to being innovative, to not looking for significant, you know, major increases in taxes, and trying to utilize existing funding to look forward and look at the future of the Commonwealth. And this is an area that he's identified and has said, we have to invest in the next generation workforce. If we don't, we're not going to have individuals that can visit, you know, that can afford to pay any, you know, spend any of their money on leisurely activities, because they're, you know, as Noe shared, they can't enter a workforce because they have to consider paying back their student loan debt. Or they, you know, they're not going to be able to afford to buy a house because they have to pay back student loan debt. So I think longitudinally, where I can, you know, I don't fault anyone for sharing frustration over loss of funds. But if we think about the next generation and the next generation workforce in the Commonwealth, if we invest in them today, they will have the resources to invest back in the Commonwealth tomorrow. And I think that's the biggest, you know, the bigger picture. And this is what the governor, you know, and, you know, doesn't always make him popular with everyone, but this is the issue that he's willing to tackle. And, you know, think about what Pennsylvania looks like after he's governor. And, you know, that's why we're making this investment today.
According to Penn State Extension, the horse race industry employs 43,000 people directly or indirectly and puts $1.7 billion back into the state's economy. That is not insignificant when you're talking about jobs. I mean, it almost sounds like the governor has decided these jobs are more important than those jobs.
Well, I don't think he's said these jobs are more important than those jobs. What he said is we need Pennsylvania's qualified, trained, and prepared to do those jobs. And I think there's a difference. And what we also hear, when we look at economic development in itself, the biggest conversation I have with employers is, where am I going to find a high qualified workforce? And I'm spending a lot of money retraining them or going outside of the state to find
them. Just what Heather was talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we have to invest in our system now so that we train them to go into that field prepared, and most importantly, they stay. And I think so it's not a and or if, you know, conversation. It's about how do we create a foundation that will benefit all sectors moving forward.
Why isn't it an either or? I mean,
you know, I think in the perfect world we could fund everything. And, you know, being a secretary, and when I meet with our members of the General Assembly, I do ask for everything, right? But at the end of the day, I understand it's basic accounting. And, you know, as we say, our budget is an alignment of our values. And what we've said is we care about the next generation workforce. We care about students. We care about attracting and retaining professionals here in the Commonwealth, and that's what the governor is investing in.
I want to thank our guests today, Pennsylvania Secretary of Education Pedro Rivera and Deputy Secretary for Postsecondary and Higher Education Nellie Ortega. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being
thank
with
you,
us today.
Scott. Always great seeing you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Be sure to tune in tomorrow's program. We have an expert on snow, something we have not seen a lot of during this winter. In fact, I think we're on track to maybe even set a record or tie a record for the least amount of snow here in central Pennsylvania. But we have an expert on the program on snow tomorrow who can talk about why snow is important and that we actually could use some, that we need some here in central Pennsylvania. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. You can go to our website. website to get an outlook of conversations we're working on, plus leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. Not surprisingly, those in Pennsylvania's racehorse industry were critical of the governor's proposing to take money away from the Racehorse Development Trust Fund to pay for the Nellie Bly Scholarship Program. They say the loss of the fund could end horse racing in Pennsylvania and take tens of thousands of jobs with it. Joining us on the program today is Todd Mostaller, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Horsemen's Benevolent and Protection Association, Russell Williams, President and CEO of Hanover Shoe Farms and President of the United States Trotting Association, and Vicki Show, Assistant Executive Secretary of the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association and a Thoroughbred Breeder. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. First segments of the program, we talked about the scholarship program that the governor is proposing. Obviously, higher education is very important. College affordability, very important. But what impact would taking this money from the Racehorse Trust Fund have on horse racing, the industry here in Pennsylvania?
Well, you had indicated that in the preview here that it could end horse racing. Let's be clear, it will end horse racing. I believe you, in the previous segment, you spoke to the Penn State study of $1.7 billion economic impact and the number of jobs that are associated with the industry. We have children also, and those are children of hard-working Pennsylvanians who get up every morning at 5:30 to tend to their chores and to tend to their horses. Our horses are our equine athletes. They're our revenue-producing asset within the Commonwealth. And with each horse that's in the Commonwealth, there's a huge ancillary impact with each horse that's here. It's thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, upward most likely in the $60,000 range. And when you look at all
for each horse.
For each horse. Mm-hmm. Yes, and when you look at those ancillary benefactors, the farmers, the agricultural industry within the Commonwealth is our biggest industry. Horse racing is a major piece of that. So when you look at the broad impact of the governor's proposed cuts, obviously it's not just a horse racing issue, it's a Commonwealth issue. And we don't believe it's in the best interest of our industry. Obviously, we'll be out of business, but it's not in the best interest of the Commonwealth.
Now, there was a horse racing industry in Pennsylvania before money was directed to the industry, before slot machine gambling was legalized in Pennsylvania in 2004. Money from slots, a portion of that money goes to this trust fund. What's different now than pre-2004?
Well, I can answer that, I think. In 2004, when the three-way racing compact was made, you had a three-way win. You had gaming entertainment, you had equine agriculture, and you had a whole new source of tax revenue for the state and localities. And since that time, the horse industry in Pennsylvania has adapted to that business model. That was a deal that was made with us, with the government, and with the gaming companies. And so not only have we changed our way of doing business, but we've invested huge amounts of money as a result of that, in reliance on that. Hanover Shoe Farms spent $2 million on broodmares last year. Broodmares are the mothers. They produce the horses that we breed. And I wouldn't have done that if I'd known the rug was going to be pulled out from under us.
Okay, just what you said, that last thing. Do you feel that the state is breaking a promise with this?
I do. That's what I'm trying to explain. This is the reason the General Assembly used this trust fund mechanism is because they saw the value of a three-way win for the casino companies and the people who get entertainment there and the money they put back into the state economy, the horse industry and the money we put back into the economy, and the money that the state and localities are getting.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember again back to 2004 when the legislature was debating the issue of slot machines. And, you know, one of the things that we were told at the time, and you were too, is that this would increase the size of purses in Pennsylvania. And that as a result, there would be better horses, that more people would come to Pennsylvania for the horse racing industry. Has that happened?
It happened initially. And the reason why it happened initially is We had two states to our south, West Virginia and Delaware, that had alternative gaming that contributed to their purses. Governor Rendell's initiative was to put Pennsylvania back on a level playing field. The act was passed in 2004. The first casino racetrack opened up in 2007. Actually, at Hollywood Casino, where my office is, we opened up in 2009. However, in 2010, so we were operating for 1 year at Hollywood Casino, in 2010, the legislature passed where money, 17% of the Racehorse Development Fund, was diverted from the fund for other sources. What happened there was that was the first sign of instability, that the people that had made that investment in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania had the rug pulled out from under them. So when you see that, and that was for a period of 5 years, there was $60 million, approximately $50 million, diverted away. That was the first shot across the bow. So now that created instability in the industry. And when, as a businessman, when you have that instability, you can't operate your business and make the investments that you see fit under that scenario. And that's why the trust of 2017 was so important, was because it gave that perception of stability. It was passed by the Senate, passed by the House, and signed by the governor. It was law. And subsequently, we saw on the Pennsylvania, on the thoroughbred side, we saw an immediate increase in the breeding because of that perceived stability. We saw an immediate increase in other investments by horsemen to now take the quality of horses up to try to make up for that 5 or 6 year period where that instability, and every year we had this fight from a budget standpoint, and it's just not conducive to good business.
Vicki Schoen, I apologize, I mispronounced your name. Just a personal observation. Penn National, for example, track I visited most often. I had relatives, family lived in Grantville, so it was right there. Wanted to go to the track after the casino opened. Found it a little challenging to even find my way through the casino to the track, that there weren't a lot of signs that were directing you to the horse track. Gave me the impression that the track was down on the list of priorities. Is it?
No, absolutely not. Since the trust was put into place, that was supposed to give people the confidence to come into the state and breed. And since that happened, PA is the only state with an increase in mares bred over the last 3 years. And just myself, my expenses per year are $30,000 to $70,000 a year. So without that money, that would cause me a problem. It causes a lot of other breeders, owners, trainers a problem. And in the last 3 years, I've bred six foals with partners, and they're all PA sired. We support the PA sires. And a lot of the PA sires, new PA sires, have been brought in for the reason of the trust, because they feel that the program would be safe. And if the governor does this, it's making it look once again like it is not safe. Like, for example, 2016, when they held back the breeder awards, it caused a lot of problems for people. They couldn't pay their bills. They were called, I work for the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. They would call in crying because they couldn't pay their bills. They would lose their farms. So this is really going to have a huge impact on the industry.
What about attendance at horse races? I mean, have you seen a difference since 2004, maybe even here in the last few years?
Well, there's a new dynamic, and it's called the internet. And we don't have the attendance that we once had at horse racing facilities, simply because on your mobile phone, you can make those wagers and you can watch those races. So the internet, the advent of the internet and the advent of all these mobile apps, obviously it's a convenience. So those wagers are being placed off-site away. Now our big days where we have some of the better horses that come into the Commonwealth and we import dollars into the Commonwealth, those big days, we will have nice crowds. And we will have thousands at the facilities. But the advent of the internet has changed the dynamic of way people actually watch our game and wager on our game.
Okay, so there will be people. And in fact, let me ask, Julie asked, why is this fund not called a subsidy paid by the taxpayers? Does the money come from elsewhere? And if from taxes, property taxes or what? No, it's not property taxes, but why should the state, why should taxpayers be, is what she's asking, subsidizing the horse
racing industry? Well, that's a misnomer. It's not taxpayers, as Mr. Williams here alluded to. This was an agreement, an arrangement to bring gaming into the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in 2004. It was a partnership between the Commonwealth, the racetrack operators, and the horse industry. And without those three elements and that revenue distribution in Act 71 in 2004, we wouldn't have had gaming in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And it's interesting to note that one of the mistakes, looking back, that we made as a horse industry in 2004 when this act was passed, if you look at the language, it says assessment on the gaming operators, okay? We were given an option by leadership to either get our money directly from the racetrack operators or to have it run through the state. And with that option, we felt with the computer control system that would be in place that it would ensure the internal controls were in place that we were getting the money that we deserved. So in other words, we trusted the state more than we trusted the operators to handle that assessment of those dollars. And now the money transfers from the racetrack operator, goes to the Department of Treasury, goes back from the Department of Treasury to the racetrack operator, and then ultimately to us. So when we made that decision in 2004, in hindsight, it was a mistake on our part. But we really felt we could trust the state more than we could the operators, and that's how that came to be. So it's an assessment on the racetrack operators. The fact that a patron makes a choice to go gamble at one of the Category 1 facilities, they're making that choice, they're putting that business, they're creating those dollars. That is not a tax. It's a entertainment choice that that individual has made, of which we were a partner.
As you say, it's not coming out of the general fund. It is coming out of what money that is. If, for example, let me just ask, and this is just a logistical question, if those who wager at the casinos bet less, does that mean less money to you each year?
Does.
It does. It's directly tied to how much money is wagered.
That's correct.
Okay. Governor Wolf, I want to read you a quote from the governor. He said, "Let's bet on our kids instead of bankrolling racehorse owners and ensure the viability of the Pennsylvania state system of higher education." Your thoughts on that quote?
Well, I think we need to look at the place that Pennsylvania occupies in racing and breeding in North America. Right now, Pennsylvania is basically number one. The only rival is New York State, which has a similar program to ours. When you ask about attendance, I just want to mention the attendance at the largest standardbred horse sale, which is carried on at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex in November every year. At least 5,000 separate people come to that sale from all over the world, and they're competing to buy Pennsylvania horses. And so Pennsylvania occupies really the top spot in racing and breeding in North America, and there's no reason to vacate that.
Each racehorse owner is a businessman. And it's true, we do have individuals that reside out of state, but their horses are here. And what happens with that is a owner runs his horses here. All the expenses are paid here. All the money stays here. And in fact, we import money into the state. To give you a perfect example, one of the largest owners in the country is a gentleman that lives in Illinois. He's Midwest Thoroughbreds. He actually lost money participating in racing in Pennsylvania from a purse standpoint. So there's an import of dollars. But in addition, he bought $250,000 of hay in 1 year from our farmers. Well, here's a guy that lives in Illinois. Yes, the checks go to Illinois, but it all comes back because he has to pay his trainer, he has to pay his vet, he has to pay his blacksmith, and they all reside in Pennsylvania. In addition to the $250 that he spent here, he actually ships his hay to his farm in Florida. So those are additional dollars that are being imported into the Commonwealth. The important thing here is where the horse is located. That's the huge economic driver. And that's where all the ancillary impacts come from the industry, is where that horse is located.
Getting back to the governor's quote, though, I don't see why it has to be a zero-sum game.
Well, that's it. My next question was, is it an either-or?
It's not an either-or at all. I think good governing is a matter of sitting down and finding money for the priorities that you want. And education is an important priority. We're in favor of education, but I think there are resources at the Commonwealth level to support all of the important things that Pennsylvania is doing.
Where? I know you don't have, you're not privy to all the everything in the state budget, but where?
Well, the gentleman that was here just a few minutes ago was talking about how he has a budget that he has to defend. So first of all, it's a negotiation. When people sit down around the table, they talk about where the money is going to come from. There are different sources. The source that the governor is going after here is a legally protected source, so that makes it different. There are things that can be done that have been rejected up till now. For instance, there's no sales tax on clothing in Pennsylvania. And there's a lot of money there if Pennsylvania starts applying the sales tax to clothing, just like the neighboring states already do.
I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for being with us today. Our guest, Todd Mostaller from the Pennsylvania Horsemen's Benevolent and Protection Association, Russell Williams from Hanover Shoe Farms, and President of the United States Trotting Association, Vicki Shoey, Assistant Executive Secretary of the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, and a thoroughbred breeder. Thank you very much for being with us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about snow. Also, education from the NPR podcast. That's coming up on tomorrow's show.